tell me that you can't be here in the daytime. Is that right? How many? One, two, three. Cannot. All right. Then there will be some other folks who may be here at night who aren't here today. Is that correct? Well, I would like to propose this. Let's today try and complete our overview of the whole book. This is not our detailed discussion. So that anybody who can't be here in the daytime during the balance of the week has a feel for what we're doing, right?
Right.
Is that fair enough?
Including tonight.
Including tonight. Tonight we won't throw it open to general discussion. This morning, this afternoon, and this evening, we will try and cover that first page of the structure of the book. But brief look-see at the whole thing. Mornings and afternoons, I would like to take the lead. This is not a monologue. You folks got questions, fire them fast. But I would like to stay with this story. Evenings, I'd like to throw it open for a free-for-all discussion. And here's the experience that I've had in Connecticut, where I've got a group budding. This is my own seed I planted. I'll take, if I ever get a society out there, why, I'll be proud. Dallas, where we get around, Oklahoma City. People always say, gee, you know, I forgot to ask these 42 questions that have been bothering me. What would you say we do this? If you've got questions, could you put them, one question each, on a 3x5 card? Could that be done? Would it be asking too much?
No.
I'll tell you what it would help me to do. I could shuffle the cards, you know? And so 18 people have asked, please be sure to discuss personality. And, all right, I've got only one question there instead of 18. Or there are six questions that are related and the whole story can be developed, one leading into another. If you can't get cards, don't worry, I can cut them up. But if you could put them on 3x5 cards, it would just help me in my clerical
like
work.
Like those, Bill, I have some.
Yeah, like these. This is grand. This is very grand.
Here are a pile of cards if anybody wants some for questions.
Sure.
I think I have some too. I'll come up today.
Mm-hmm. I'll keep them here on the piano.
And this doesn't mean that you don't bust in and ask any question you want anytime you want. But I think we'll cover more territory, we'll spin our wheels less, if we introduce a certain minimum amount of organization. Does it appeal to you all to work that way?
I can't open it.
Good.
I want to put some on here. I can't open it, Paul.
There's one question that's been asked me, and I'd like to take it up. How much can be said about the origin of the book? Is it breaking the oath to tell of early stories about the book? The contact man, the redwood tree section. Is it permissible to tell who was on those early committees? Many of us are at a loss just where to stop when talking about the book and its origin. For example, many details are printed in the appendix. It's a real adventure story, isn't it? Just think, that night he walked into Ardnan's salivary glands and taste buds for the first time, and he tasted food. And it seems to me that his gospel was, God is a being you can trust. He's a just and moral God. Because until you trust God, you don't have any foundation on which Michael could point to the fact that God is a loving Father. And I think there's a great deal we can learn in the story of his missionaries. For example, when you divert spiritual energy to accomplish even a desirable social end, this energy, and can pervert the spiritual purpose of a mission. Can you think of any more desirable social objective than to eliminate temple prostitution? This was a then acceptable practice. And you'll recall the Melchizedek missionaries in Mesopotamia embarked upon this venture. Net result, not the elimination of temple prostitution, but the collapse of the Melchizedek missionary venture in Mesopotamia. And Melchizedek never commissioned his followers to go out and stamp out prostitution, did he? Jesus never commissioned his followers to go out and insist on monogamy, but Abner did. Net result, Mohammedanism, which teaches polygamy. That's the nearest mention they make of Protestantism in the book.
There's a reference to the fragment of the situation.
Yes.
And
that's right. Protestantism and Sikhism are the last religious developments that they touch upon lightly. And they're roughly contemporary in time. Are we with it yet?
It's all right, thank you. No,
you're right.
Fine. Thanks, Paul. That's fine, thanks. See the light's on.
They were too venal. They were a little too corrupt. And this, what might have been the grand legislature of Christendom, gave way to the autocracy of papal authority. And the Protestant, well, 100 years later, ended the wars of religion. And as I read the story of that Congress, my heart is broken at the venality of human nature.
Bill, true. You talked about Peter and Paul being good organizers. I thought about that quite a bit.
Especially Paul.
Yeah. I feel, in my, this is my opinion, of course, that because of their wonderful ability to organize, that they somewhere lost the concept of what they were organizing, and this did more to hurt
things than later. At least it survived in some form.
Well, what survived?
The perversion of Jesus' teachings.
Yeah.
And maybe it had to be perverted to survive. I don't know. I don't know. But I think it's very important that we study these things. Because Arnold Toynbee says, and truly, those who know not history are doomed to relive it. And what I pray is that the Arantia Brotherhood make new and original mistakes. We do not have to repeat the mistakes of our predecessors. And therefore, we should know about their errors. Not to sneer at them, but to learn from them. When I look at my service record up there, hope I get a chance to bootleg a look at it someday, the most wonderful inscription I could ever see there is, "He made new and original mistakes."
You mean on the higher tribunal?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Now this would be.
You get for whoppers.
I would take that as a summa cum laude. Let's have a coffee break. What do you say?
In church about once a month, but I'm there to give a talk to bootleg. You know.
I think in reality is the story of how things got started, and universe levels of reality is the story of where they're going to. So you have the present, the past, and the future of reality. I think we'll have a little fun with those three papers. They really aren't very hard. When you get down and look at them, you know, with the whites of their eyes. They're hard only because we tend to make them hard. And because we say, gee, they're talking about real abstract concepts, and this is a long time ago, and they're talking about the derivation of the absolutes and the segmentation of the I am, and actually, I think we can symbolize this in such a way that it won't be very difficult. At least I hope to get your ignorance
as well unified as his mind. If your ignorance is unified, you're comfortable about it, you know? It's ununified ignorance that bothers you. Have any of you read the... Well, I know you've all read these three papers. Do you find them difficult? Well, they're not the easiest papers in the book. I think the story of the flight to Egypt by Joseph, Mary, and Jesus is a little simpler of comprehension. We then encounter a group of papers which I think have to do with the ministry of deity. It pertains to deity as it impinges on human experience. There are four fascinating papers dealing with thought adjusters. Fragmentations of the nature of God. You know, God is kind of hard to understand. When you think of him as having levels, pre-personal, personal, super-personal. I think of the best way I can think of a thought adjuster is like this. Let this card symbolize God. There's a thought adjuster. It's a piece of God. It's not all of God. But from a qualitative standpoint, it's God's nature. As that little fragment of that card is of the nature of the card.
Paper someplace emphasize that
my practical religious life, very frankly, I don't take up very many problems with God. I'm a little bit abashed. I mean, I'm not in the least afraid of God. He's too big. If he were only about 10% of his size, I could be afraid of him. But he's entirely too big to be afraid of. And I understand intellectually that he's infinite. And that he has just as much time for me as if I were the only creature in all existence. This I understand. But I'm a little abashed at taking up his time, nevertheless. But I've got this thought adjuster. And I'm not abashed about taking up his time because I am his business. You follow me? He's my partner. And I find it much easier to conceptualize a conversation with God if I direct it at the adjuster instead of at the universal father on paradise. Paradise is a hell of a long ways from here. But the adjuster is right here. I can get familiar with this adjuster in a way that I would be a little bit concerned about with the universal father. I don't feel a bit familiar toward the universal father. My attitude has no fear in it, but it doesn't have any familiarity. But I can talk plain street talk to this thought adjuster. Have you ever tried that? You know, the thought adjuster doesn't have your sensory mechanism. In trying to visualize what a thought adjuster is like, think of a secondary midwayer who is our next of kin. And a thought adjuster is almost as remote from a secondary midwayer as from a human being. But did you ever stop and think that a secondary midwayer has never seen the color green? To see green, you have to have eyes. And a midwayer has no eyes. I think a midwayer can use the English word green accurately. Because a midwayer's sensory perception is cognizant of light having the wavelength amplitude which we experience as green. But a midwayer has never seen green. Are you with me? This thought adjuster is tremendously more remote from the human level than is a midwayer. Let's consider again Let's think about a solitary messenger. One of the highest orders of the higher personalities of the infinite spirit. When you get to the mansion world, you're going to see seraphim, but you won't see solitary messengers. Even when you graduate into the true spirit levels of existence on the minor, major sectors of the super universe, you won't see solitary messengers. Even when you reach Uversa, you won't perceive a solitary messenger. You won't have the sensory equipment necessary to perceive a solitary messenger until you get to Havana. That's what rarefied spirits they are. Let's take what we know of a solitary messenger and consider, how does a solitary messenger react to our world? Well, first of all, the solitary messenger knows that this world is here because the solitary messenger registers the pull of linear gravity. The solitary messenger is acutely conscious of the physical mass of Urantia. Number two, this solitary messenger, I think, is cognizant of the surface of Urantia. Because you know what the solitary messenger perceives of the human race? The adjuster presences of the indwelling adjusters, and that's all. I don't think we register on the solitary messengers. I have tried to conceptualize a solitary messenger's view of Urantia, and I think the solitary messenger perceives the human race as a collection of fireflies in globular form, clotted by population density, and that's the thought adjuster. That's all he registers. I think the solitary messenger also perceives spiritual orders of existence. But as far as we're concerned, he sees the adjuster part of us, not us. I don't think he has the equipment to perceive temporal beings. All right. What does your thought adjuster see? Thought adjusters are pretty high order beings too. They're from Divinington. I don't think, if I were to compare perception, I'd like to compare the perception of a thought adjuster to that of a solitary messenger rather than to that of a midway creature. Secondary midwares, I think, perceive very much as we perceive, allowing for a difference in sensory mechanism. No midwayer ever tasted anything because they don't have any taste buds. Never saw anything because they don't have eyes. Have no tactile sensation because they have no skin. I find secondary midwayers hard enough to understand without trying to reach up to thought adjusters and solitary messengers. But look, here you got a thought adjuster that gave up. Well, that you might say is not only a fragmentation of the love of God, but is also a fragmentation of the adventuresome spirit of God. God is a personality, and I think the spirit of adventure is inherent in all personalities. And what is this whole creative business except the universal Father adventuring directly and vicariously? I don't think anybody this side of the Universal Father would have had the courage to construct beings like us, to take glorified animals and indwell them with the highest form of spirit in existence. This is the wedding of antipodal opposites. All right, these adjusters are adventurous. I have never heard of any draft quota existing on Divinington. No adjuster is ever a draftee. Every adjuster is a volunteer. I suppose the only time they make a selection is if they have more than one volunteer. But that's merely a choice as between volunteers. And is this a kind of a Pollyannish, blind, sentimental, injudicious love? Gosh, no. These thought adjusters who have volunteered have not volunteered for the human race in general in some area. They volunteered specifically for each one of us. And they did so with knowledge aforetime. They did so with a full forecast of exactly what they were getting into. Precisely. They saw all of the pitfalls, all of the probabilities, all of the chances they were running. This was not the volunteering of blind audacity. This was the volunteering based on cool, intelligent, calculated courage. They knew precisely the odds. All right, this being the case, why don't you tell your thought adjuster about this planet he's in? I don't think the adjuster registers very much of it, but you can register on the thought adjuster.
How?
Talk. The only way I know to communicate is in words. I talk, usually in the privy. Because I experience the greatest probability of privacy and solitude.
That's meditation.
It's a mortally recluse.
Oftentimes in the bedroom on a train. Or maybe, I hope, silently in the seat of an airplane.
Or driving.
Yeah.
Or driving the car alone.
Kid your thought adjuster a little bit. Say, look, pal, did you realize what you were getting into? Pay him some attention. This should be a camaraderie. And I don't think anything you say in sincerity could possibly give offense. You follow me? Words are unimportant. I'll never forget one old boy. He was in an awful jam, and I suggested he pray. And he looked at me with amazement. He says, "You pray?" I said, "Sure." A very hard-boiled character who'd gotten up but with more with this than with any alphabet after his name. And he said to me, "Well," he said, "if I were to pray, how should I pray?" Well, I said, "If I were in your boots, I'd pray natural." Well, he says, "What do you mean?" Well, I said, "I'd just talk to God and say, 'Dear boss, as you can plainly see, I'm in a hell of a fix and I need some help damn fast, and what are you going to do about it?'" He says, "You mean talk to the Almighty that way?" I said, "Sure, that comes natural to you." He says, "You talk that way?" I said, "No. I have other forms of expression, but that's the way you talk to your foreman. Why not talk to God that way? That's your natural mode." Do you ever try to make love to your thought adjuster?
No.
Yeah, why not? I can see nothing to be afraid of there. And this adjuster, I think, would enjoy some attention. Even stupid attention.
Bill?
Hmm?
Here we know.
Here we know. If that person can use an experienced adjuster, he'll get one. If he couldn't use one, he won't. Example. Let's say that you had a series of adjusters volunteering to indwell the being who is to become Simon Peter. You've got three virgin adjusters. You've got an adjuster who once indwelt a great mechanical engineer on some planet where they fused with a spirit fusion technique. You've got another adjuster who indwelt a great lawyer who didn't survive. And you've got another adjuster who indwelt a great orator. Which would you assign? Why not the orator? That's Peter's aptitude. The adjuster can utilize.
But this was before Peter was born.
Yeah, but the forecast is there.
Oh, yeah.
They've got a working model of Simon Peter up there.
But he could follow him up and not become the
exactly. Exactly, yes. A part of the adjuster's job is a continuous rework of the original plan as point by point, we smash it through our decisions. And the adjuster has got to reconstruct the best plan with the pieces that remain. No. It speaks of the adjuster as lonely in here. It speaks of this indwelling as an incarceration. And I would submit that if God can derive satisfaction from the worship offered by ascending mortals on paradise, this indicates that God enjoys intelligent appreciation. And this adjuster is a fragment of God, partaking of the nature of God. And is there anyone here who doesn't like attention? How about that? Wouldn't you rather catch hell than be ignored in the long run? I don't think the adjuster's any different. I think the adjuster would enjoy some attention. And there's plenty of times in privies and other times when you have nothing else to do that I think it would be nice to pay some attention to the thought adjuster.
Can you give him too much attention?
Mm-mm. The demands of this world are too great.
But I don't follow by...
Listen.
Then it's only from our viewpoint then, really. It wouldn't be from his.
I think he appreciates and enjoys it. God appreciates worship.
I'm sure of that.
All right, he is of the nature
of
God.
The next part I don't quite follow. It made our experience.
I think he wants our love.
Yes, that I follow.
Yes, and attention is one way of showing love.
But the
it's spending some time with him. It's just not taking him for granted. As a child probably takes its parents for granted.
There's a part before that I didn't follow.
No, he is not.
He's not?
He's
no,
a qualified absolute, not an unqualified absolute.
I see. That's what I didn't understand.
Put it this way. I think the adjuster can get the full calories of experience in the mortal indwelling with or without what we're talking about. But I think if you showed him you loved him and paid some attention to him, you would be putting salt and pepper on his fried eggs. It would taste better. It would not add to the caloric value of the experience, but it would add to the pleasure of the eating.
Well, here's my counsel.
Beyond this, if you had a business partner and you liked your business partner, would you limit your intercourse with that partner purely to business?
Well,
that's what I'm talking about. It's the social overtones of a partnership relation. My thought adjuster. I kid with him. When we get into a strange town, I say, what do you think of this burg? You know? And I try to tell him what kind of a town this is, because I know he can't perceive it. I tell him what it means to a person. I take time out to try to act as a good interpreter and a good guide to a being who can't really perceive where he is.
Why can't he?
I thought I made that clear.
No, I'm still...
I guess it's in part two. What I'm trying to do here in part is to give you a feeling of greater empathy for page 498. Is the Celestial Artisans, written by an archangel of Nebadon. Let's start in paragraph 3. All these activities of the Marantia and spirit world are real. To spirit beings, the spirit world is a reality. To us, the material world is more unreal. The higher forms of spirit freely pass through ordinary matter. Are you with me now?
Mm-hmm.
It isn't there. High spirits are reactive to nothing material except certain of the basic energies. And when they say reactive, I mean that to mean means perceptive too. It doesn't register on them in any way, shape, or form.
But just the art of conversation would erase that?
Let's go on. To material beings, the spirit world is more or less unreal. To spirit beings, the material world is almost entirely unreal, being merely a shadow of the substance of spirit realities. I say that to the thought adjuster, this world is just as imperceptible as the thought adjuster is imperceptible to us, or as a seraphim is imperceptible to us. The archangel goes on, I cannot with exclusive spirit vision perceive the building in which this narrative is being translated and recorded. A divine counselor from Uversa, who chances to stand by my side, perceives still less of these purely material creations. We discern how these material structures appear to you by viewing a spirit counterpart presented to our minds by one of our attending energy transformers. This material being is not exactly real to me, a spirit being, but it is, of course, very real and very serviceable to material mortals.
How do you feel that?
This thought adjuster registers very much of this world in which we now live. And I take pleasure in trying now and then to tell this thought adjuster a little bit about what this world means to me. Yes.
That's a preview.
Is the ice cream and cake of the relationship. This is not the business of the partnership. This is having your partner and his wife out for dinner. You're not going to talk business, at least your wives hope that evening. This is being friends. There is no reason for this except it's fun. This is a luxury. Look, you can go all the way through the mansion worlds without Marantia companions. They're not necessary, but they provide them, their personality luxuries. You could go through the paradise regime without paradise companions, but they provide them. They are personality luxuries. This is not just an efficient universe. This is a romantic universe. And I think a certain amount of romance is in order and is necessary to healthful relationships between personal and potentially personal beings. If the thought adjuster is your friend, act friendly. Bob. Anyway, if the idea appeals to you, give it a whirl. And if you think it's silly, forget it. Question. The problem there is the fact that you're spiritually deaf. And it's so darn seldom that you ever hear him. I will merely make this flat statement. I've never been sure of hearing mine at any time in my life. I've never doubted that when I was talking, it was a dialogue. I just happen to be deaf, that's all. In fact, I'm so hard-boiled in my attitude, if I ever did hear a voice, I'd probably immediately consult a psychiatrist. I'd decide it was the initial stages of paranoia. I don't know, an unreasoned conviction. An unreasoned conviction. I can't offer any proof, and yet I know. I just know, yes. I have the satisfaction of a dialogue.
That's what's known as your personal religious experience.
Yeah, I can't prove it's more than a monologue, but I know it's a dialogue. And I can't blame the adjuster because I'm hard of hearing. I can conceive of a lot of other folks being here. I wouldn't be at all surprised, but what, there was somebody from the, oh, maybe a representative of the religious guardians who sponsor churches, who was saying, tisk, 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 I wish this character from Chicago were more ecclesiastical minded. And maybe there's a colleague representing the Seraphim of Progress who says, shut up, sister, you people have balled things up bad enough in the past. Thank the Lord he isn't a theologian, you know? And heaven knows who else will be here. Wouldn't surprise me at all. I'll tell you something else that wouldn't surprise me. On August 21st, at various places all over the earth, people are going to be thinking about Jesus' birthday, and this will be one of the few places where it'll be celebrated. And it wouldn't surprise me at all, but what, there would be many more personalities in this room than Fred Squires could count when he takes official inventory.
Could you close that
But I don't believe that on the finite level, God chooses to foreknow whether human beings survive or not. And I'll give you a good illustration. When you deal with deity, you're dealing with levels of consciousness. And I think the best way to learn about God the Father is to study the life of Michael. Michael sometimes, after the baptism, I'm talking about when he functioned really as a descending son, as a bestowal son, you have an interesting problem of the consciousness of the human Jesus, Joshua ben Joseph, who was a real man among men, and you've also got the consciousness of a paradise creator son. And the papers point to some telltale evidences of the two levels. Jesus is talking to a backslidden Jew, and he forgets himself. And he says, I think it was Ezra, he says, Ezra's all worried about God is mad at him, you know? And he says, Ezra, he says, you're the father of many children. Now he says, you don't stay mad at your children. And the old boy looked at him and says, but Rabbi, who told you I was the father of five children? The human consciousness forgot that this didn't belong there. Again, and this is not my speculation, you'll find this. This is the Midwayer speculation. When the messenger from Bethany came to Jesus at the end of the Perean mission, bearing word from Martha and Mary, saying, Lord, he whom you love is sick to the death, Jesus stopped, thought, and said, no, this sickness is really not to the death. He knew precisely what he was going to do. His detached, personalized adjuster issued orders to the thought adjuster of Lazarus, stand by, don't depart for Divinington. Now, when he arrived at Bethany, here is the Creator Son who knows all things. He said to, who was it ran out to meet him? Probably Mary. He said, where have you laid him? The human Jesus didn't any more know where they'd put him than you or I would know. And as the Midwayers say, it appears that at times he chose to be limited by just what his human consciousness would know at that time. Otherwise, he would have denied himself all adventure during his public ministry. Let's set up a concept. Yeah, I'm going to stay on this subject now. Up to the baptism, he operated strictly as a human being.
Yeah, I see, yeah.
Now, stop and consider, Dorothy. If he'd been just a human being, he'd have fused with his thought adjuster and left this world.
Right, yeah.
He had done all that God asks a man to do. Mm-hmm. His post-baptismal life on earth is not as just as a human being. He is now functioning as a descending son. I want to draw a little picture on the board. Symbolizes a firehouse. See, if I can deal with fried eggs and firehouses, by gollies, it's the only way I can stop being afraid of these ideas. It's a three-story firehouse. And that, you can see the stories, can't you? That thing running down the middle is the fire pole. You know that the firemen slide down? No. The first story is the finite level. And the top story, the third story, is the absolute level. We're going to refer to this many times as we go through this book. The middle story is the absinite level, the transcendental level. The first story, you've got limitations of time and space. On the top story, you have absolutely no conception of time and space, no reaction to time and space. It isn't real. On the middle story, the transcendental level, they know all about time and space and transcend them. Here, in the about the, you remember the story of the evolution of a creative spirit? Not that's in part two, but in part one on the supreme spirits. It speaks in a certain point. It's in about the third stage. She's hardly yet differentiated from within the infinite spirit. It says that we are not sure, but we believe that at about this point, this being becomes group conscious of destiny and becomes space cognizant. This creative spirit has to learn to become conscious of space, because when she joins her Michael coordinate in the super universe adventure, the local universe adventure, she is going to pervade all of the space of her local universe. And she's got to be conscious of space in order to stop at the edge of the local universe. Because beyond her presence is not Nebana. Where she is present, that is our local universe. The thought adjuster. Is he time conscious? No. The thought adjuster in his time relationships is as of the third story. He's space conscious, though. Golly, he has to be. Otherwise, how would he know to stand still where we are? You remember Jesus, the jester, said, now don't worry. If you form some idle wish, I wish I were in Rome and talking to one of the Stoics there, he said, nothing will happen. I understand all about this. But he said, if you want to abridge time by some wish, I can't help you. It isn't real to me. Now, I think that center pole I like to present as the personality of the Universal Father. It is real on all three levels of our firehouse. And what we encounter when we reach paradise and engage in the deity adventure from the third Havona circle, what we're doing is we're crawling in on the floor of the first story and touching the center pole. I believe that God down here can adventure and experience uncertainty, truly adventure. Up here, the Universal Father, as absolute, the Father infinite, knows the end from the beginning. Here, he lives in eternity. Here, by one means or another, he adventures in time. Even as the combined nature of Michael in the post-bestowal ministry here on earth, you have to reckon with a human consciousness and a divine consciousness and the interaction between the two. Michael had a soul. Rather, Jesus had a soul. He commended something into the hands of the Universal Father when he died, because no seraphim was able to cope with it, take care of it. And that soul survived. And that soul is still in existence as the human nature of the Master Son, who is sovereign of this local universe. There is a human aspect to Michael of Nebada today. A soul evolves? When this little Jewish baby was in his fifth year, he made a moral choice. And it probably was a typical moral choice. And basic morality is a choice between selfishness and altruism. And when he made that choice, this thought adjuster who indwelled him left Divinington and invaded the human mind. And that invasion constitutes the conception of the soul. And all throughout, the purely mortal career. Of Joshua ben Joseph, he grew a soul, just like you grow one or I grow one, except he grew a really big one. He grew to the point of a just refusion. That's a big soul. That's a soul ready to be born, not by cesarean section, but normal birth. He would have probably have skipped the mansion world, you know?
Yeah.
He didn't have anything to learn there.
At the end
of time of baptism, the adjuster was detached. The soul is still there. You now have a unique relationship between the human mind of Joshua ben Joseph, the mature soul of Joshua ben Joseph, and the thought adjuster, and the divine mind of Michael. Now, when Michael died, Joshua ben Joseph died, just as you will die and I will die someday. Michael didn't die. You don't kill a creator, son. And the papers point out that during the time of the tomb, many things happened which indicates that Michael was alive. One of his last words were, "Father, into your hands I commend the keeping of my spirit." That soul went somewhere. Now when you or I die, I know what's going to happen. Our group guardians or our individual guardian will take over. Michael didn't have a seraphim anymore. I don't know where his soul went, but I'm certain that when the Marantia Jesus was resurrected, this was built around that soul, because that's what the Marantia you was going to be built around. Where it was during the 3 days of the tomb is up for grabs. No one knows. Now, when Jesus was released from the Marantia estate, I think that soul went right with him. In other words, the character, the human character of Joshua ben Joseph is still a part of the divine nature, the combined nature of Michael of Nebadon.
That's interesting. I never thought of
that. Peter's son is a Melchizedek, too.
Yeah.
He is a primary Lenanandek.
He's a combination of all of the seven bestowals.
Check. His character is a mosaic of all of these. Even as the experiential character of a personalized adjuster is the mosaic of all the beings he ever indwelt.
Otherwise, he wouldn't go through this.
Yes, that's right. Now, a thought adjuster, I don't think really knows the outcome of the adventure. If he did, would it be an adventure? I think the thought adjuster knows the odds. Some may not be good, and some may be very good, and some may be middling. But even so, the alchemy of decision is not absolutely forecastable. And I think dark horses win the survival race, and sometimes the favorite falls on his duff, and all bets are off, you know?
Bill?
Here, let me give you an example. This happens to be my business. One of the ways our firm makes its living, such as it is, I was chuckled when they put that sign up on the bulletin board. This is a non-profit organization. It wasn't planned that way, but worked out that way just the same. We measure human beings and forecast what they're going to do. And we have a good batting average, because people keep buying our services, and it isn't because we're pretty. And this is no infringement of human free will, is it? All right. What we do, the papers say, is something pretty grotesque. They use the specific word grotesque. They can do a lot better job, but even they say they can't absolutely forecast human decision. I think what the thought adjuster has is probabilities, but not certainties.
Well, then the adventure is...
Accepted Judas. The papers say it was a faith adventure on Jesus' part. I don't think Jesus absolutely knew how Judas was going to come out. If Michael weren't actually a human being, then the whole bestowal is a farce, isn't it? But I think he really sweated out. I think he really was tempted. I think he really was tried. I think he really was subjected to enormous stress. If this was for real. Question?
Do you think it
paper 1180, page 1185. Last paragraph. Although we do not definitely know, we firmly believe that all thought adjusters are volunteers. But before ever they volunteer, they are in possession of full data respecting the candidate for indwelling. The seraphic drafts of ancestry and projected patterns of life conduct are transmitted via paradise to the reserve corps of adjusters on Divinington by the reflectivity technique extending inward from the capitals of the local universes to the headquarters of the superuniverses. This forecast covers not only the hereditary antecedents of the mortal candidate, but also the estimate of probable intellectual endowment and spiritual capacity. The adjusters thus volunteer to indwell minds of whose intimate natures they have been fully appraised. But there's one thing the thought adjuster doesn't know. What kind of a personality is the Universal Father going to endow this creature with?
Combination.
Right. This is not completely forecastable. Because remember, every time God bestows personality, it is a volitional act on his part. And to understand how and why and what he does, you would have to understand more than the divine counselor who writes the paper dealing with personality. It's beyond the divine counselor.
No, the entire state is.
Yes, the biologic, environmental, and intellectual background. And you could probably make some awfully good forecasts, but you don't really know.
That same thing holds true.
He indwelt Melchizedek, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
What do we know about...
Almost nothing. The paper 5 says, when God bestows it, we do not know. How he does it, we do not know. However, we do know this. The creature is a personality before he makes a moral choice, or he couldn't make the moral choice, which brings the adjuster. When that personality appears, I don't know. Neither do the authors of the papers. But it exhibits itself in the first moral choice.
Well,
there, yes. Or you have a 5 adjutant mind, you do get a 6th value in there, which is the individuality value. And it's not a personality. And in a baby, to what extent you have a foreshadowing of that, and to what extent that's what we think is personality, and when the doggone personality comes, I don't know. I don't think anybody else knows. Because the first time you can be sure it's there is when you see it in action. And that's when the first moral choice is made. But it must have been there. It must have been there for some time before that choice could have been made.
Do we know?
When? It's in the 5th year.
2134th day of life.
That's how many years, Fred?
Oh, 5 and 2/3, I think.
All right. That's when it hits on the average. Well, what do you think of my idea about paying some attention to your thought adjuster?
I'm still interested in it, though.
To be friends with your thought adjuster. Yes.
The thought adjuster, I...
To sit down for a short beer with my thought adjuster. You know what I mean? And I'm deliberately using some rather street English here. It is a gemütlich period. I haven't got any business to transact. Intellectually, I agree with you completely. Emotionally, I find it easier to talk to my partner.
Was that just
directly to God.
according to his life, he mm-hmm. suggests that you do.
There's no difference between the thought adjuster and the universal father.
Oh,
but what about Jesus?
Here, I feel this way. When I'm talking to my thought adjuster, I'm using a telephone to talk to God.
Why?
I think it's fun to sit down with your partner when you're not in trouble, when you don't have any particular issue, and be friends. You know, how many of you who have had kids in college realize that you'll always hear from them when they run out of money or need something? And that's good. That's good. No denying. But it's awful nice if they'll pick up the phone and call up when they don't particularly need anything, just to chat. Isn't that even nicer? It's real. The thing that is real to you and the thought adjuster is your soul and personality.
That's true.
And mine.
I mean, I follow that.
Sure.
But I can't follow.
Besides knowing the end from the beginning. For the course. Now, it's possible not to fuse with your thought adjuster. That fusion may be delayed all throughout the Marantia career. You may be long delayed in fusing. No fault of yours, and obviously not of the adjusters. When you get all the way to Salvington, there are a very few beings. This is a minuscule part of 1%. Who never fuse, for no discernible reason. The adjuster is detached, and they are immediately fused with an individualized portion of the spirit of the Creator Son. And this is the origin of the Son-fused ascenders. Mm-hmm. No fault of either party. It merely produces a different type of being, with a slightly different destiny.
What happens to the,
personality goes right on with the ascending being. The thought adjuster...
What happens to the ascended being is really the way I want to do it.
He goes right on into the super universe career and becomes...
Not a finality.
No, he becomes a permanent citizen of Uversa.
I think.
Right.
Yeah.
The thought adjuster
yeah.
is released for further indwelling.
Yeah.
This ministry discusses basically origin, mission of thought adjusters and what they do for creatures. And it goes on into the full dress discussion of human survival. The discussion of the adjuster and the soul, the discussion of personality survival, and in the introduction to that paper, you find the nearest to a definition of personality in the Urantia book. They introduce it by saying it would be presumptuous to attempt to define personality, but let's take inventory about what we know about what personality does. And the inventory, I think it's a dozen or more, functions of personality. And then, of course, there's the fascinating paper on seraphic guardians of destiny, because they're intimately concerned with human survival, both as concerns the mechanics of survival and also their own personal ascent to paradise is dependent on their association with an ascending adjuster-fused mortal. And while they're talking about seraphim here on Earth for good measure, they discuss how this planet is run, how it's governed. I think it's a fascinating discussion. As they go into the superhuman administration of this planet and break it down into the 12 functional divisions of seraphic government, this planet is actually being run by Paradise Attainment Seraphim. Seraphim who have done, in their capacity, what a human being does when he becomes a finaliter. They've worked their way into paradise, but instead of joining one of the finaliter corps, they've elected to come back out to minister in their former local universe as completion seraphim. And they're the beings that are charged with the administration of the evolving worlds. I think this discussion of thought adjusters is fun, isn't it? This to me is a being, with all due veneration, I consider as a comrade. I mean, we're in this adventure together. And I believe he's going to get just as big a kick out of learning about my end of things as I'm going to get out of learning about his end of things. And I'm just practicing down here. And I bet a cookie, most of it doesn't get through. But it's fun to practice. And I'm sure, even if my communication is lousy, the adjuster is appreciative of the fact that I take time out and think about it. You know? Let's very quickly take a look at the last story in part three, which is the full dress discussion of experiential deity. And I think in terms of the neophyte, first looking at the Urantia book, I think maybe it's real smart they buried this story deep in the strata of the book. This would sort of scare the pants off of someone coming in for the first time. This story, I think, is one of the hardest to grasp. Because, you see, by and large, Urantians come out of the Protestant Christian discipline. And our minds are not grooved to think in terms of experiential deity. Father, Son, Spirit, this clicks, you know. Although the Spirit's a little bit different from what we're used to. But now all of a sudden, we have God in process of evolution. And I think of it as very simple.